Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. They did it. The Lakers got a win against a quality opponent in the New York Knicks yesterday. We've got a lot to talk about from that game, what this means, big picture, the LeBron of it all. We'll get into all of that, plus take your questions and comments. Happy to see y'all here. If you haven't done so yet, double check right now. Are you subscribed to the channel? If you're not, let's fix that. Hit that subscribe button. Follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts as well. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Tipp. I'm Trevor Lane. Jason, playing hurt today. Getting through today's show. We appreciate you gutting it out.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, ever since I moved to Denver, apparently my immune system is completely unprepared for this metro area as I just continue to get sick over and over again. I have been bedridden all weekend, and I haven't been like bedridden for multiple days sick in like at least 5 years. Like this, it's just been super bizarre, and I've been super frustrated. But it is what it is. I'm pretty sure I got it from the Nuggets game. So it was probably my fault for going out like that. But I appreciate you guys bearing with me. The question is, am I going to be like MJ flu game or like Luka game 3 versus Minnesota flu game? That's the real question.
Oh, well, I guess we'll find out. If you get delirious halfway through, we'll try to reel you back in. But yeah. But I think we're going to see more MJ flu game here. And to be fair, I think a lot of Lakers fans were a little under the weather after that Denver game.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, we've got a lot to get into. So we've got the big win over the Knicks. I thought it was one of the best games we've seen the Lakers play from an energy perspective, from a want-to perspective, from a they went out there playing like they really needed to win that game. I was really happy with what we saw out of this Lakers team. Jovan, let's start with you. What were your big takeaways from the Lakers win over the Knicks?
I thought it was a statement win. To me, it's the best win of the season. If you look at, so now LA improves to 5-12 against teams with a 600 win percentage or better. And there's only one other game in there that I think you could consider the best win of the season, which would be the second game of the season, first win of the season when they beat Minnesota at full strength with Luka and Austin. But otherwise, like, you know, they beat Minnesota without Ant. They beat Denver without Jokic. They beat the Spurs without Fox and Harper. And that was before the Spurs had really popped into what they've been for the past 3+ months. So this was like no excuses, if anything, the Lakers were playing like fifth game in seven nights. They had a quick turnaround coming off of a back-to-back. Like if they were without LeBron, which we will get into that whole discussion, but if anything, like you could pile the excuses on the Lakers side in terms of like them not being at full strength and just the context of their schedule this week. But they came out, they played harder. Like that was one thing that just really stood out to me. Like, I mean, the defense was great, especially by Lakers standards, like for the entirety of the game. But like Austin said this after the game, we just like wanted this more than them and we played harder than them. And I was thinking through it and I was like, how many times have we come on here and said the exact opposite in a big game for the Lakers against a good to great team? Like they have not played this way against these types of teams consistently this season. And so I said this coming out of the All-Star break, I wanted three things for the Lakers. I wanted them to get healthy. I wanted them to figure out a better way to optimize the big three. And I wanted them to have a few statement wins. They've gotten pretty healthy. They've been pretty healthy coming out of the break. The big three together have been a +7 net rating coming out of the break. So still on the season, -1. They got to get that into the positive. But like we've seen some positive indications with those three together. And they finally got the statement win. They got blown out by Boston. They lost a close one to Denver, depending on how you feel about Phoenix. They lost another close one to them. So like it had not been the best start coming out of the break. But I've been asking for a win like this. They delivered. And to me, like now it's about, can you sustain this? Can you beat Minnesota? Can you beat Denver? Like, I don't want to be having this conversation 3 weeks from now when we're talking about, remember that one win the Lakers had against the Knicks and like how great that felt at the time. Like they got to build off this, but I thought this was a great win and they showed me a lot yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. It was the, you know, it can be such a nebulous thing when we talk about energy and effort and hustle and all of that, and certainly hard to quantify, but it was inescapable as you're watching this game, just how much harder the Lakers played than they typically do. I mean, to a man, even there were moments where I was doing the play-by-play live where I was complimenting DeAndre Ayton for hustle. And I mean, that's a rare thing, right? He was rolling hard to the basket and doing things.
His first shift was like his best shift in weeks. I guess you could throw the Orlando, like, you know, some of the stuff in the Orlando game, but outside of that, like, that was his best shift to me in weeks, I think.
Yeah. Jason, what did you take away from the game?
Yeah, so we had a mailbag question last week, if you guys remember, that was centered around like, hey, like, what do we got to do to start beating good teams and to actually hold up in these matchups? And one of the concepts that we talked about, if you guys remember, is the kind of inconsistency of the three phases of the game for them. The three phases being like their like star shot creation, guys taking and making catch and shoot threes, like the off balls, shooting talent, scoring talent, and then just their overall defensive effort and connectivity and them reaching their own individual ceilings on the defensive end. And one of the things that's happened too often this season is like they'll defend in a big game, but the stars won't look good, or the stars will look good, but the role players won't make shots, or like, you know, they'll have like certain elements in that trio that have gone their way, but others that don't. And this team can't beat the good teams unless it can actually put those three things together. I thought that was the most complete performance from the Lakers this season in those three phases of the game. Austin, I thought that was his best game since the calf injury. I don't want to dive into it too far because we're going to talk about it when we get to the LeBron segment, but I do think getting LeBron out of the lineup for a couple of games helped accelerate Austin's rhythm building just by giving him a couple of games where he could get extra touches and kind of work his way back into rhythm. Austin looked fantastic. Luka, I thought that was a really good game from Luka. He did take some tough shots that took his efficiency down from where it could have been. But overall, I thought Luka did a very good job of consistently breaking down the Knicks defense. I thought the Knicks really struggled guarding the Lakers pick and roll with Kat in this game. It threw a variety of different ways, whether it was Kat getting stuck at the level, leading to the low man coming over, which was leading the ball getting moved around to open shooters on the weak side, like Rui Hachimura, to like Kat really struggled to stack in this game. Marcus lit him up on a couple of back screens that gave easy dunks. The overall approach from the stars was really good. So you get two good star games in terms of the catch and shoot play. And this is the one kind of like qualifier, like, I thought the Lakers got better shots. I think they would have beat the Knicks no matter what yesterday. But I think the reason why they were up 20 at one point had to do with the poor shooting from the Knicks. The Knicks, the Lakers had 28 catch and shoot jump shots. The Knicks had 28 catch and shoot jump shots. So they had the same amount. The Lakers got more unguarded. They had 15 unguarded compared to 12 for the Knicks. But on those 28 catch and shoots for each team, the Lakers got 1.18 points per attempt and the Knicks got 0.54. So like a giant chasm in the shooting result, which I think caused things to be a little bit more dramatic than they looked. But I want to give them some credit too. Like, I thought there were a lot of extra efforts on contests, like big ones in that early second half run were like Jackson Hayes and Rui in particular made some extra efforts on shots that they could have just conceded that they ended up getting late contests on. You guys mentioned the overall hustle. Like, there was a run there where Marcus Smart and Jake LaRavia in the third quarter were just getting every offensive rebound. Jake was kicking Jordan Clarkson's ass as he was being really poor on his weak side box outs. But so you get quality shot creation from the stars. You get role players making shots. You got well over a point per catch and shoot attempt. You're overall just winning the hustle margin parts of the game. And then it was their most complete defensive performance I've seen against a really good offense in a long time in terms of just making the efforts. You can go so far on defense just by playing super hard and being connected in your rotations and making extra efforts. I know it's like it kind of gets a bad rap when we talk about it on shows like this because people want to focus on complex X's and O's. It's so much easier to be like, oh, this is the coverage we use to beat them, or like, oh, it was this wonderful lineup combination. But like, a lot of times it's just like we played really hard, and when we play really hard, we're a good defense. Like, just about anybody is going to play be a really good defense when they play hard. I was watching the Hornets Suns game this morning, and like half of the way that the Suns slowed down the Hornets is just how good they are in rotation. They run around super hard. They fly around. They help each other. They help the helper. They talk through rotations. It's the half the battle when it comes to defense. It's just playing hard and being connected in your rotations. And so when they put those three things together, they're really hard to beat. And I mean, we can get into specifics like DeAndre Ayton defended Karl Anthony Towns extremely well. I thought that that was a strong a positive from this game. I thought all of our perimeter guys did a fantastic job on Jalen Brunson. The amount of quality reps we saw from guys like Austin Reeves and Marcus Smart on Jalen Brunson, where he would drive into the teeth of the defense, like get into that like 10-foot range, but Lakers players would stay attached and quickly close the gap so he couldn't quickly go to his turnaround or get out of position to where they'd commit fouls. I just thought it was a really strong all-around performance against a Knicks team that's been arguably the best team in the league over the last month or so. Like they've been really, really good. That was a very, very impressive win.
Yeah, 7 turnovers in the game for Jalen Brunson, 18 turnovers in the game for the Knicks, and that was indicative of the Lakers defensively. You mentioned Austin Reeves defending, and we saw a couple of times in the fourth quarter where Austin, as the last man to beat at the rim, which is the weakest part of Austin's defense, he got stops. There were a couple of times he got strips down low, which was great to see. The Lakers defense was very locked in, and I love offensively, we saw, especially in the early going, we saw a determination to use that paint to great concept where the Lakers were getting paint touches, and that was what was generating their three-point attempts for guys like Rui Hachimura, Luke Kennard, even. They were generating attempts by getting paint touches first. Now, Luka will still take the step-back three, but for just about everybody else, the three-point attempts were coming off of a collapsed defense with a paint touch, a kick-out, a spot-up opportunity, and I love the way the Lakers were moving the basketball in yesterday's game in order to create those opportunities. They were capitalizing on them. You saw Rui, I believe he was 3 for 3 from three to start the game, tailed off after that, but they really, I think, got the Knicks on their heels with how often they were getting those paint touches, to the point where late in the half we saw the Knicks even, they blitzed Luka, sent the extra defender at the short roll in order to prevent that going, and left Luke Kennard wide open in the corner, and Luka went, F you, I can make a 45-foot pass, just threw the ball cross court to Kennard, who drained the three. They started getting the Knicks making bad decisions on the defensive side of the ball because the Lakers offense was operating so, so well and just putting them in situations that they could not get a stop. So this was, wire to wire, great performance. I mean, Jovan, you and I have talked a lot about the Lakers not playing a 48-minute game. This was pretty damn close to it. I don't know if it was a full 48 minutes, but it was not far off from it. Probably the closest we've seen.
Yeah, it wasn't full 48, but like realistically, I mean, no one played like you want to play close to a full 48. No one. Yeah. There's also like a cultural element to this where I think the more you do something, the more reps you get with something like that. There are some teams, I think OKC, Boston, I think San Antonio has been this way the last few months. Like there are some teams that are pretty stable. And even if they're going to lose a basketball game, they're showing up. They're trying hard. It might just be for whatever reason, it's a bad matchup or they're having a poor shooting night. Like we've not been able to see, like we've been able to say some of those things for the Lakers, but it's also been, and they didn't try as hard and they got their ass kicked physically tonight. Like that there's been these extras that like they have not always controlled the controllables. You can't control if Marcus Smart's going to go 1 for 10 from the floor, but you can control scrum, loose ball. I grab it, throw it off of Jalen Brunson. I'm diving into the stands and busting my finger, trying to save a loose ball. There's a 2-on-1. We're up 18. I could take a transition possession off. I blow up a 2-on-1 to prevent the Knicks from getting momentum going into the fourth quarter. Like you can control those things. And I just don't think they've been able to do that consistently. But I thought it was the best win of the season. I also think, for me, it's a better win than some of the early wins because I value this part of the season a little bit more than the beginning of the season because we just have not really seen the 15-4 Lakers post that stretch, right? Like they've been a 500 basketball team for 3 months now. So we're getting to the point. There's a month left in the regular season. We're on standings watch on a daily basis. Even last night, like Lakers end the game. They're in the 4-5 with Minnesota. Houston loses, then all of a sudden now they're in the 4-5 with Houston. So like these things are going to be changing on an hourly basis over the next month. And like this was a really important matchup for them. And I think they even talked about it. Rui talked about it after the game that like they wanted to send a message yesterday that they wanted to show like we can actually beat these good teams. Like they've heard the chatter, that they've heard the discourse of we don't beat anybody good, and they went out and did it yesterday.
Now, Jovan, is there, when we talk about consistency, sustainability, is this going to be, and I see some people in the chat saying it was just one game, is this sustainable? Is this something, and I know we can't definitively know the answer to that, but is there anything that we can take from yesterday's game that you think can be replicated moving forward?
Well, one of the things that JJ has consistently said, I would say like starting with the second half of last season, was the notion of you told on yourself. And I think yesterday was a game where the Lakers told on themselves in terms of, if I'm the coaching staff, I'm playing the highlights. I'm playing the clips where, you know, talking about saving balls out of bounds and stops in transition and like just all the little things that the Lakers did well. And I'm saying like, this needs to be the standard moving forward. There are no excuses. Like, you guys need to approach every single game over the final month of the season and into the playoffs like this. And if you play like this and we lose some games, that's okay. Like, it's gonna, no team goes undefeated playing their hardest, but you at least set a certain standard and a certain culture and hopefully a certain amount of momentum going into the playoffs. But I do think, and maybe this transitions us into the LeBron conversation here, like the key is going to be figuring out how to do this with the big three, because I think it's undeniable that like they have looked better with two of the three in the lineup. I think there's going to be a lot of focus on LeBron being the one that was out and it being Luka and AR and the record without those guys. But I think if you, just from an eye test perspective, like, I think whoever's the sidekick, I think Austin's looked better without LeBron. I think LeBron's looked better without Austin. Like, LeBron's best stretch of the season came when Austin was out. So I think that the key moving forward, we've talked about staggering, and I think JJ's gone in a better direction with the rotation. Like, I continue to say they're not changing the starting group. Those three are going to start. They are going to close. So we could have, we talked about it, I think last week or the week before, like we could have the fantasy conversation of, are they going to move LeBron to the bench? Are they going to move Austin to the bench? Are you going to split up the big three? That's not happening. So what the Lakers need to figure out here over the final month is, how can we have these three guys on the floor for 15 to 20 minutes against good teams and still win those minutes? And then also, obviously, you know, at least tread water or win the bench minutes. So it's like, this is the challenge here moving forward. Because I think they've shown when it's two of the three, they can kind of figure it out. And like, it's just simpler, right? Like, it's a simpler process than having to figure out and fit those three together offensively. And then you also have the defensive limitations. Like, so I'm not denying that they look better with two of the three on the floor. I just think for this team to achieve its ceiling, whatever that ends up being, they're going to have to figure out how to play better with the big three against good teams. Because even if you bring, let's just say LeBron comes off the bench and he has an epiphany, you know, he feels passionately about the win yesterday. He's like, I'm going to come off the bench. You're still playing 15 to 20 minutes with the big three on the floor, whether it's in bench groups or whether, you know, closing, whatever. You still have to win those minutes. You still have to be better in those minutes. So like, I think people are focusing a lot on who should start, who should come off the bench, the some of the narrative stuff. That's fine, but you're still going to play with the big three on the floor and you still need to be better in those minutes.
There's this perception that the bench unit and the starting unit are two completely separate things and they never cross paths. And by moving LeBron to the bench, you're completely separating him from Luka and Austin. That's just not the case. There, you never see the full bench unit on the floor. There's always at least one of Luka, Austin, or LeBron out there on the court with them. So you have to be able to not only mix and match, but you have to be able to win the minutes with the three of them on the floor, because it's impossible mathematically to not have the three of them on the floor for large chunks of the game. And of course, they're all three going to be on the floor to close the game, even if you weren't to start one of them. And then you're opening up a whole can of worms if you were to say bench LeBron or bench Austin or bench Luka, whatever it would be, right? You would wind up with every day having to address that question. Why is this guy coming off the bench? What, it would create a whole other distraction that you'd be dealing with. And I 100% agree with your assertion that in order for them to reach their ceiling, in order for them to get where they want to go, the path is getting the three of them to be good on the floor together, not banishing one of them or trying to just permanently split them up in your rotation and just giving in to this concept that three of them on the floor is simply not working. I think talent level wise, you have to have the ability to play with the three of them on the floor, even if it's easier right now to make it work with two of the three. And I think we've seen pretty consistently when the two are Austin and Luka, that's looked better than the other two-man pairings. Jason, I think this conversation has obviously gotten a little extreme on social media. We've seen some just say, just bench LeBron, banish LeBron, you know, that type of stuff. I think there's plenty of agenda behind that, and I don't want to go down that path. But is there a way for the Lakers to make it work with the three of them on the floor? Because I think Jovan's absolutely right. The reality is they're not sending any one of those three to the bench, and they are going to be closing games with those three on the floor.
Yeah, you know, I try not to get too worked up by, you know, the energy that comes from the fan base in cases like this, because LeBron is just super polarizing. There's a lot of people that just don't like him. And the thing is there's actually a nuanced conversation you can have about the big three and the fit and LeBron and how he's played with them, how he's played without them, and how all this can work. And that's not a conversation those people are interested in having. They just want to shit on LeBron. That's just it's very much a like a weird personal vendetta thing for a lot of those people. So you kind of just have to focus on there's a nuanced discussion you can have here about the fit. So for instance, like I mentioned earlier, I do think it helped Austin that LeBron stepped out for a couple of games so that he could work his way back into rhythm. There's no question that that helped. I do think that there's a little bit of an issue with LeBron when he's in an off-ball role as a jump shooter because he's shot the ball so poorly this season. Mm-hmm. That said, there's other like obvious things that are staring us in the face in this recent stretch that are important context. So for one, as Jovan mentioned, the big three has been pretty good since the All-Star break. They have that LeBron, Austin, Luka, Marcus quartet has been really good since this entire season, really, in the brief stretches that they've had to play together. The LeBron by themselves units have been really good all season. They're plus 7 per 100 possessions in almost 800 possessions this season. So like, how do you parse all that down into Jovan's point, like making the most of it, like maximizing the trio? And that's where I think it gets interesting, because like, first of all, Austin wasn't playing well when he came back from his calf injury. He just wasn't. Mm-hmm. So like, what if we actually dig into how the flow of this season went? The Lakers early in the season against a light schedule with LeBron out of the lineup, Austin and Luka dominated. They played really well. Everything was going great. Obviously, you head into this stretch where LeBron comes back, and LeBron's bad because he doesn't have training camp and he's playing his way back into shape in these games. Then Austin goes down and we have this extended stretch where it's LeBron and Luka together. And in that stretch, LeBron had a good stretch offensively in the first chunk of it, but he was pretty bad in the second chunk of it. Then Austin comes back and he's clearly out of rhythm. So what we have not actually seen yet this year is the Austin from yesterday alongside LeBron and Luka. We haven't seen like real LeBron and real Luka. We straight up haven't seen it. And so like I talked about this on my show this morning. Like, I think it's pretty clear that Austin's a better offensive player than LeBron and that we should be playing through Austin a lot more. I think LeBron should primarily function whenever he's on the floor with one of those guys as a screener. And if he's not, if it's a screen and switch type of situation, he should be spotting up off the ball. The one time I would look to play through LeBron on the ball is if he's either on the floor by himself or if he has a favorable post mismatch, then they should be going to him on the block, because LeBron against an undersized defender has been one of their most successful play types this season down on the block. But like I talked about this earlier, like, Austin wasn't playing well. Like there wasn't a version of this where they were going to force feed Austin when LeBron and Luka were out there because Austin wasn't playing well. Austin has started to build rhythm. The best version of this team is going to be Luka and Austin as your primary ball handlers, LeBron functioning as that secondary ball handler slash ball screener slash guy who attacks out of the post. There's this team is too devoid of certain types of talent for LeBron to not be involved. They just have struggled to piece all of it together where like, yeah, LeBron has had to do too much because Austin's been out. And when Austin came back, he didn't look like Austin. And so I think there's the one thing that has clearly stood out to me from the season is LeBron has not been able to generate any real momentum as an on-ball shot creator from the perimeter. Not at any point this season has LeBron had like a two-week stretch where he looked like the guy we saw in Madison Square Garden last year on the night of the Luka trade, where like he looks like prime 2018 LeBron picking a defense apart. Like, we haven't seen that from him at all this year. So now that Austin's in rhythm, play through him, play through Luka, have LeBron focus more on an off-ball role, I think it can come together. There have been two guys that the Lakers have obviously statistically been better without this year, Jake LaRavia and DeAndre Ayton. Mm-hmm. They've been dramatically better with them on versus off. LeBron is at like -2 as an on-off, and if you really dig into it, it's just all the bad data from the big three early in the season, and there's it's being floated or countered by the fact that the LeBron by themselves units have been so good. But I actually just want to see – I want to see a long stretch here to end the season where the big three is all healthy, where they're playing through Luka and Austin, and LeBron can try to function as an off-ball player. I just want to see that for an extended stretch and see if they can find some of that synergy, because they have had some good success in the last few weeks.
I think there was an element of this with Austin, because it's easy to just fall on the, well, Austin's just better without LeBron, right? That onto that. But against Indy, they didn't have LeBron either, and Austin was kind of the same. He took 14 shots. He was okay. He helped out a little bit, but he wasn't the guy that we saw last game. In the past, there have been situations where LeBron's been out, Luka's been out, and we've heard from JJ Redick that he went to Austin before the game and said, hey, I need 35 out of you tonight. I think Austin has to be in that mindset. I don't know if that's what JJ said to Austin last night, but it was pretty clear they had a real interest in getting him going early and often, and said, look, we need you taking shots. We need you being ultra aggressive. If you miss, you miss. We're not winning unless you go out there and put up a big performance. And Austin responded very well to that. The key is getting him to be in that mindset when you've got all three of those players on the floor together, which I get it. Sometimes it's, you know, you look across the court and that's LeBron effing James. Like, it's kind of hard not to defer to LeBron at times. But I do think for the Lakers as a team, number one, I think they need Austin to be that good offensively. But when you're talking about that off-ball role, and I know people have made the Draymond Green comp for a LeBron role moving forward and how that can kind of work, I think it's also important to note that of the three, LeBron is the most capable of the three to fill in that kind of a role. If we're talking about one of the big three taking on a, I don't want to say lesser, but a different role on the offensive end of the floor, LeBron, I think, is the most capable of the three of them of doing that and still being incredibly effective. Now, can you do that with this much runway left in the season, dramatically shift LeBron's role? I thought he did and does not get enough credit for the job that he did last year after Luka arrived and the defensive shift that we saw from him in terms of role. It's asking a lot, I think, to change things this significantly. But the bottom line is right now, if you look in the half court, LeBron's numbers are not great. Where he's had success is in transition. The inverse has been true for Luka and Austin. So it's a matter of meshing those two things, and it might mean a shift in roles to where they get Austin to be this ultra-aggressive version and LeBron to be more of the third guy on the offensive end. And that's not a negative or a detriment to LeBron. If anything, it's a compliment that he's such a versatile player that he can do that. But I think that may be the path forward for the Lakers if they want the three of them to be successful on the floor. Now, that said, that's kind of difficult to massage egos and make all of that work. And hey, you know, you're LeBron James and you may be you're certainly one of the greatest of all time. Maybe you're the best ever, but you're going to take this third guy role on the offensive end. And we're going to need you to focus in on the defensive end and all of that. Maybe that's a difficult conversation to have, but I think it's a shift that ultimately is going to need to be made if they're going to wind up getting where they need to go. Now,
can I quickly follow up? I think LeBron wants this. I think LeBron wants to be the third option. I mean, even just watching that Nuggets game and the way he was flowing into those DHOs with Austin out of the left corner when he missed that pull-up three against Valanciunas in the deep drop. Like, LeBron has been waiting since Austin came back from his calf injury for Austin to be Austin. And I don't think, like, that's why I say I want to see this. Like, I really do think that there's a version of this now that Austin has found his groove that can work at a really high level. Like, I have my eye on these games this week. I think the Lakers have a chance, especially if LeBron comes back. You know, if Austin can keep this going, that it basically just exactly what we talked about at the beginning of the season. Combine that Luka Austin two-man attack that is so hard to handle – with playing hard on defense and, you know, a certain floor in terms of their effort, and then have LeBron just kind of filling holes off of that. That's the best version of this team. And like, even with the jump shooting stuff, like look at those wide open threes that Marcus Smart got at the end of the Nuggets game, just because LeBron makes these insane connective passing reads. Like, I really do think this can come together. They just needed Austin to be great. He hadn't been great from his calf injury, but he looked great last night. If they can piece that together, I think this can work at a really high level.
Go ahead, Yulman.
Let me add one more thing here. So I think, again, I want to ground this conversation in reality in terms of just the big three are going to continue to start. They're going to close games. And I think JJ's done a better job of staggering them in the middle of games. And I think clearly Luka and Austin need to play more together by themselves. Like, I think we can agree on that, right? Like, of the two and three man, there's only one three man combination, but like of the multiple two man combinations plus the three man combination, by far the best combination has been Luka and Austin without LeBron. So I think the Lakers need to do a better job of finding pockets of those two together throughout the course of, you know, bench groups in the middle of the game. But if we accept the premise that the Lakers are going to start the big three and that's not going to change, I think. And Marcus Smart has been a key contributor and I think the fourth best, or like the best perimeter fit around those guys among the different, you know, fourth options there. I think it brings us back to the center conversation and some quick numbers on this. With the big three plus DeAndre Ayton, they have a minus 3.2 net rating. With the big three with Jackson Hayes, they have a plus 15.6 net rating. That is almost a 19-point per 100 possession swing. Now, with DA, it's about 200. It's about 200 minutes with DA. Okay. It's about 70 minutes with Jackson. So there's, you know, some noise with that, right? But at least like a little bit of a sample size to suggest that like there is a difference there. I don't know if it's, I don't think it's a 19-point per 100 possession difference, but there's a difference there. One lineup has thrived. One lineup has, and remember, like Jackson's often played with them in like close games and like closing games. He's not always playing with them necessarily first quarter, third quarter. It's a lot of like closing a half or closing a game. Then you just isolate it for just the big three without DeAndre Ayton. So this could be Jackson, this could be Maxey, this could be small ball, this could be basically any other iteration of a big three lineup, plus 13.1. And that is also an 80-minute sample size. So like most of that has come with Jackson, but some of that has come in a different iteration. So I'm not suggesting another starting lineup change per se. I also think there's a political element with that where they want to keep DA engaged and involved. And he did have a nice performance against New York. But I also look at that and I'm like, okay, if the big three, it's not changing. They're not like, they're going to maybe stagger them in the middle of games, but they're starting and they're closing. How can you optimize the pieces around them? And I do think there's a clear trend here of they have just objectively been worse with DA next to them compared to the other center option. So like, I think that's something to consider down the stretch here as well.
You know, it's it would be, I'm seeing people in chat saying like, how do we know what LeBron wants? LeBron has literally been asking to be at least the second option since the moment Anthony Davis arrived. That's how long ago we're talking about. We're going way back to 2019. He's been asking for the offense to run.
I mean, the Russ trade was like in part because exactly. LeBron wanted to play off the ball more.
Exactly. Now, does he want to go to third guy? We'll see. But I wouldn't put it past him. Actually a credit to LeBron that he's so versed and so willing to just be off ball and do whatever the team needs. All right. So in terms of moving into tomorrow's game against the Wolves, this is a team that kicked the Lakers' ass in the playoffs. The Lakers are 2-0 against them on the season. Jason, what do we need to see in order to deal with a Wolves team that probably is going to be out for some revenge tomorrow?
Yeah, so this is a group that is going to run most likely the same kind of deep drop coverage that we've seen the Lakers struggle with at various points this season. We've talked about it, though. One of the upsides that the Lakers have in this particular matchup is Minnesota's perimeter defenders, as good as they are, there are favorable matchups for the Lakers within that concept. So, for instance, one of the reasons why Austin had so much success against the Timberwolves is Jade McDaniel is a really good defender, but he's taller, more upright. Austin can kind of get him out of position. Luka in the playoff series last year, Fat Luka, was unable to deal with Jaden McDaniels, but we saw Luka in an early season matchup this year, better shape, better conditioned Luka, actually have a good amount of success against Jaden McDaniels, kind of tossing him around and getting him to his spots. So the biggest thing I'm worried about actually is the defensive end. I think on offense, the Lakers are going to have the tools that they need to generate good looks against this group. But on that defensive end, this is the kind of group that has the type of big physical ball handlers that can pick on a Lakers switching scheme that has some kind of tissue papery defenders at the point of attack. So I think it's going to be another test for this defense that's very different than the Knicks group. Because that Knicks group, again, with Jalen Brunson, they were able to contain him and then do pretty well off of that because Ayton did a good job on Kat. So I'm more worried about them defensively. But I do think they're going to see a similar drop look that they've struggled against other teams. It'll be a good challenge for them there as well.
Jovan, how much of it depends on what version of DeAndre Ayton we get? Because DA was pretty damn good when he played the Wolves earlier this year. Can we see the DA from even in just a 20-minute shift last night? Can we see DA play at that level tomorrow against Rudy Gobert and the big front line for the Wolves?
We can. I'm not going to predict it or bet on it, to be clear. I don't, you know, don't put my name on that. I mean, it's a big factor, right? So I think a key difference in thinking about the Wolves versus the Knicks, I think the Wolves have some more physical advantages just with their collective size and strength and physicality and athleticism on the perimeter with guys like McDaniels and Ant. And so I think it's just going to be, there are some similarities with the Knicks, but I think it's going to be an even bigger test. Like, I just think Minnesota is a better team than the Knicks ultimately. So, and look, this could be a first round preview, whether it's the 3-6 or the 4-5. Lakers could be getting their rematch with the Wolves. So this will tell us something about that. And Lakers have already won the season series, so there's no stakes in that regard, but there's the stakes of just, I think, like, pride, continuing to beat good teams, and also ultimately, like, this will have an impact on the standings and where LA ends up and could be a determining factor whether they're 3-4 or 5-6. So I think to Jason's point, I agree. Like, the defense is going to be really tested because I think Ant is a different animal than anyone on the Knicks in terms of, like, the athleticism, the downhill attacking, the force. We know the Lakers like to zone up in you know, guard a certain way there, so that they're going to flood on either side, or they're going to be kind of in that general, like, 1-2-2 approach with cheating off of some of their shooters. So part of this is going to be, can Minnesota shoot better than the Knicks? I think they can, but we'll see how that looks. But yeah, I mean, we've seen this movie before. We saw these teams match up in the playoffs. They had a couple meetings early in the season. I think Minnesota's played much better than they were playing at the beginning of the season against the Lakers. Then another one of those games, it was only Austin on one side, no Ant on the other side. So we really can't, I think, take away, like, too much from those early season matchups necessarily. But Austin did look much better and more comfortable against them in those two games. So I am interested to see how he can translate what he did against the Knicks and some of this momentum, if he can apply that into a Minnesota game, especially if LeBron's back, because again, not to, like, bring some of that stuff back up, but, like, if LeBron's back, like, they're going to have the same challenges they've had with the big three against some of these teams, and, like, figuring out just how the offense flows, how they can be at a certain level defensively. So if LeBron's back on Tuesday, like, that this is a real challenge for them just to kind of navigate that, because again, they haven't been able to do that up to this point in the season.
Well, I think we have to remember too, when we're keeping an eye on the standings in terms of the Lakers' motivation. Yes, the season series is not on the line in terms of the tiebreaker with the Wolves. They've already secured that, but the Suns won a losable game last night against the Hornets. They're only two games up on Phoenix, and they do not have the tiebreaker, and they will not have the tiebreaker over the Phoenix Suns. The Lakers have to keep winning games, even if the team, and this is kind of the sense I get, that they're not that worried about, are they the 3 seed, the 4 seed, the 5 seed, the 6 seed. They are worried about, are we in the play-in? And LeBron talked about it the other day, about how it's important for them not to be in the play-in. They don't want to add another game onto their ledger. They don't want to add that to their workload already. They feel like they need the time off. they need to win this game, not just to prove they can beat the Wolves, not just for their record and for maybe moving up the standings. Those things are obviously important, but also keeping ahead of Phoenix, which is a team that's going to push hard to try to catch them. And again, with the season series in hand that Phoenix has, that's going to mean that the tiebreaker's in their favor, so you can't wind up tied with the Suns either. So the Lakers have got to keep stacking wins, especially during this difficult portion of the schedule. So this is a big game for the Lakers, and I'm hoping that we see them come out the way they did against the Knicks. All right, to make sure we can get through the majority of them here, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments. SC Lakers said, Luka played great defense. Smart's intangibles are priceless. AR is much better when his role is clearly defined and the offense defense flows better. Jason, anything to disagree with here?
No, I did think Luka had one of his better defensive games of the season yesterday. I thought Marcus Smart was incredible yesterday. Just I thought the screens he was setting in the lane and the Lakers stack looks were super, super important. The scrapping, the individual defense on several players, I thought Marcus was great. I think if there's one thing that I like about AR when LeBron's off the floor is he primarily focuses on ball screens with bigs rather than ball screens with LeBron. The thing with the ball screens with LeBron is it'll lead to more LeBron post-ups, which aren't necessarily a bad thing, but they can get away from Austin's rhythm, so to speak. So, like, with that being the case, again, I thought yesterday was just a really good step forward for Austin and his rhythm, just getting a lot of really good pick-and-roll reps. Austin had, like, three or four unbelievable passing sequences out of pick-and-roll as well yesterday. He's just gotten so good at making the reads as he's coming off of ball screens, too. It was just great. I mean, I can't disagree with anything on this list. It was a really complete game for the Lakers.
Yeah. I love that. And I had this on my show last night as well. Marcus Smart was getting tons of praise for Lakers fans, and he shot like shit last night. But he was awesome defensively and doing all the things the Lakers needed. And that overcame the shooting woes. The way he has these games like a couple times a month where he just can't get anything to go. And last night was one of those nights, and it didn't really matter for his overall impact. He was absolutely phenomenal.
I said last night on my show that Marcus Smart had the best 1-for-10 game any yes. players had this season.
He was awesome.
I mean that as a compliment.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he overcame that in a big way. And I hope that against the Wolves, he shoots a bit better than that. By the way, this came up a bunch on my show too. Jovan, where are you at on the odds that Smart picks up his player option?
I think he's going to opt out. I think he would get more. He's out. He's not, because his player option is so low. I mean, he's barely above the minimum. He's just at $5 million. I think he's easily outplayed that. Like, I think if not for the health concerns, he's somewhere in like the 10 to $12 million mm-hmm. range probably, but maybe he's a little bit lower than that, but I mean, yeah, I think he's going to opt out.
So that would in theory cut into, if the Lakers are going to keep him, cut into their available cap space. If
he's missed one game since December 10th. He's been available.
If he opts out, that gives them actually, like, a lot of the current cap space projections are projecting Marcus and DA to both be opting in.
Yeah.
If he opts out, that adds an extra $5+ million, and then you can earmark that room exception of $9 or so million sure. dollars and use part of that on Marcus. So it could actually kind of help them do some moves and then save that exception for him. So I think there's a natural like way that can play out in LA's favor.
It could, in terms of, it gives them the spending power below the cap, and then if they can use that room exception as the mechanism to ultimately keep him, that could work out well for them. All right, let's see. This one said, yes, the Lakers need LeBron, but zero dark 30 LeBron. Yeah, I mean, you're going to need a high-level version of LeBron out there. I think that one of the big keys is just seeing some natural regression from his three-point shooting. He can't be a 30% three-point shooter, particularly when we're talking about playing in the half court with Luka and Austin. They're going to need that number to normalize a bit in order to get the version of LeBron that you need. And I think in order to get, at least offensively, the ceiling level play that you need with the three of them on the floor.
There's a there's a transition defense element off of LeBron too that I think, or transition offense off of their defense element with LeBron that I think is important too. Like the Lakers have actually sneaky been fifth in the NBA over their last 15 games in points off of turnovers, even though they're middle of the pack and actually forcing turnovers, which I think LeBron has been a big part of. There's a lot of like elements that he can bring, but I agree. They need the zero dark 30 version, meaning they need the locked in playoff version. Do you guys remember when I talked about at the end of the Nuggets game, how Rui was kind of providing a jump shooting element that was important? Yeah, if LeBron's mailing it in on defense, Rui is a better fit with the starters because of the utility as an off-ball shooter. But like LeBron is so much better defensively and so much better as a rebounder than Rui and so much better as a connective playmaker than Rui when he's locked in, that like it's a no question, no brainer that he's the best option with the starters when he's that version of himself. So I firmly agree with this take. Like the Lakers need playoff LeBron in every way except for on-ball shot creation, and Austin actually getting back to form is what's going to give him that flexibility to devote resources in that direction.
And some of that has to be too for LeBron James, who understands how to manage his energy levels over the course of the season probably better than any player we've ever seen. Some of that is LeBron's not going to push that button until we get closer to playoff time. And I don't think it's simple as just, you know, playoff mode activated or whatever, and suddenly he's awesome. But I do think we're going to see greater energy, greater attention to detail from LeBron James just naturally as we get into these bigger playoff level games, and certainly as we get into the playoffs themselves. By the way, you brought up Rui. Got to give Rui credit. 7 rebounds in last night's game. That's what we've been dying to see out of Rui. He did much better work on the boards yesterday.
As all the JJ said it after the game, and I was like, he's right. And when he was like, we won because we made multiple all of our guys made multiple efforts. It's literally just the truth. I know it's such a boring answer, but it was just the truth. It's what happened yesterday. The Lakers like straight up outscrapped the Knicks.
Sarah says, feels good to have a show after a win for once. We've had them before. They do exist, but we have had a number of shows after a Lakers, and we don't plan it that way. Just that's the way it goes. Sometimes we have a show after a loss. Sometimes we all wear black because it's
because we've had a lot of shows after big games, and the Lakers have lost a lot of big games. Different today though.
Yeah. I think Bron needs a role change in the half court offense. He needs the ultra Draymond role, defense, passing, cutting. We kind of already talked this concept, so we don't have to rehash that. But yeah, I think we're all in agreement that ultimately a role shift could benefit the Lakers if they're able to really lean into that.
Austin hasn't had consecutive 20-point games since December 4th and December 5th. Like that's kind of the point that I was trying to make earlier when I'm talking about like the getting Austin in the groove. So like there was a stretch when LeBron was in the lineup in mid-November, like because LeBron joined the lineup in November 18th. During that stretch in LeBron's first, so he played 6 of the following 7 games. In that stretch, Austin went for 26, 22, 31, 38, 33 at 44 against Toronto. And that was a game that LeBron was in. Like that was Austin in full rhythm, LeBron playing in a support role, but LeBron was in bad shape and he was working like LeBron wasn't very good at that phase. Like I really do think I know I've been hammering this point today, but like LeBron, the idea that Austin can't put up numbers next to LeBron was literally refuted earlier this season. He just hasn't been able to do it since his calf injury. We talked about this extensively last week, and we all agreed that we thought Austin would have a bounce back at some point later in the season. If this is it, if this is the beginning of Austin's bounce back, we're gonna see LeBron play the Draymond role. We're gonna see LeBron function as a off-ball cog in the offense. He was just waiting for Austin to click back into gear.
I love it. Let's go. Hopefully that's what we see tomorrow. Lakers get a massive win. Dominican Republic annihilated Netherlands in 7 innings. Great weekend. Got to stay sharp for Minnesota. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot more positive. I know there's the LeBron conversation out there, But Lakers fans are feeling a lot better today than they were a few days ago. That's part of, I mean, the different tone for this show today is, again, coming off of a big win as opposed to a big loss, which has been the case too often so far.
Yeah.
Let's go here. If Rui, Kennard, and Smart come back for $10 million each, would we have enough money left to build a championship defense? Who could we realistically get? So that's where Jovan's point about potentially using part, or maybe it has to be all of the room exception, that $9 million that you get after you've spent all of your cap space to retain. Maybe it's Smart, maybe it's somebody, maybe it's one of those three. That could be useful in keeping some flexibility below that cap in order to go add pieces to this roster. As far as who we can realistically get, gone over a lot of those options, and I know a lot of people geared towards the bigger names, which are the RFAs, the restricted free agents. That can be a perilous path, but it's hard not to dream of Walker Kessler, Atari Eason, a Peyton Watson, somebody like that joining the Lakers. There is going to be a limit to the Lakers' flexibility, even if they do wind up with the most cap space. They'll be right there neck and neck with the Bulls. It's not going to be necessarily like the Lakers can just go spend and add 5-6 different players. They're going to have to be very creative with the room that they've got. And that could come down to making a difficult decision with some of these guys. A lot of it's also going to depend on what do they want on their next contract. If Rui says, hey, I want $20 million, then that may be a bit much. And the Lakers may be better off looking elsewhere. That's going to be a big challenge, is fitting all the puzzle pieces together with this for Rob Pelinka. And guys, we've talked a lot about this. Jovan, I know it's something you've talked about a lot. I think there's also going to have to be, as we see the Dodgerification process of the Lakers front office, as I've been calling it, I think we need to see a shift in the style of player that the Lakers value. In my opinion, they have to be laser focused on finding those defensive pieces, whether it's at the guard, the big, the wing position. They've got to add those guys who could defend multiple positions, the guys who bring some athleticism, guys who can shoot. As difficult it is to find those guys, I don't think they have, despite having as much cap space as they're going to, I don't think there's any room for them to get distracted by any of the small combo guards that have caught Rob's attention in the past.
Yeah, I'd be looking at strong culture guys too, just in general, like guys that are tough dudes that are gonna breed a certain amount of accountability on a day in, day out basis. Like, I think that I would really, really be focusing on culture over the next few years.
You know how the Miami Heat have their body fat percentage standards, and they're constantly testing the guys' conditioning and body fat percentage. The Lakers need to have one of those roller coaster sides. You need to be 6'6" to be added to this team moving forward. No one under 6'6". You must be this tall to join this team. 6'6" and taller. That's it. No one else. No short by NBA standards. Yeah.
So Jovan and I make the roster then? Is that
I feel very, we're very targeted by these comments. Thank you.
Sorry, Trevor.
All right, let's go.
Called the no Trevor's allowed rule.
God, I am, guys, I know we've talked about all meeting up in Vegas and doing like something live in person and all that kind of stuff for Summer League. I've already started looking like, can I find shoes that make me slightly, because I'm just gonna be standing between two of you guys looking up. Oh my
God. We should have a 3-on-3. We should let people come and play 3-on-3 against us too. And then we'll test out Jovan's Achilles. See how it holds up.
Let's do it.
I can just be the spot up shooter in the corner. AR is not him. Anything more than 25 to 30 million would be an overpay. Atrocious defense. Worst in the NBA. Did y'all see what he did to Jalen Brunson yesterday? Worst in the NBA, maybe. Body broke when asked to carry the load. Cannot be Luka 2. Jaden for 3 picks. What, McDaniels, I'm guessing? Sign and trade.
Yeah.
Sign and trade AR for Michael Porter Jr. I wasn't expecting to get negative Austin comments coming off of the game that he had yesterday. I thought he was even good defensively. I will say throughout the year, there's been a consistent, anytime he has a bad game, what his projected salary goes down based on the chat. And anytime he's a good game, it goes up. I think we need to let the dust settle, and that will ultimately determine, what does he do in the playoffs? I think will be a big factor in all of that too. And that's going to help determine, what does Austin ultimately get this summer? I think this is amplifying what Austin's effectiveness actually is with this team. Is he top tier superstar player? No, but I think he's been very damn good with the team this year. And do you want to give him like max money? I mean, that may have some tough things when it comes to actually building out the rest of your roster. If you can find a middle ground, I still think he can be very good with this team moving forward.
He's had a kind of a brutal season in terms of injury luck, and he's been playing alongside one of the highest usage guys in the history of the league. There's been lineup turnover because of the LeBron situation throughout the year, and he's averaging 24-5-5 on 65% true shooting, and all season long has been one of their best on-off guys. Like, I don't understand the negative Austin energy. Like, the stuff about him playing against the best teams in the league, I can't even really get 100% on him about that when the team has had all sorts of team-wide issues in those matchups all year.
This is – I understand concerns about Luka and Austin combined and saying you've got two guys who individually are not good defensive players. I do think both of them can be better than – what the general perception of them is defensively. The general perception out there is that neither Luka nor Austin is anything defensively. Both of them are basically non-existent on the floor on defense. And I don't think that's accurate. I think they're bad in certain situations, but they're also good in certain situations. They both have individual strengths and weaknesses on the defensive side of the ball. I think we can see that pairing work. I understand why there may be some concerns about that pairing moving forward and ultimately wanting a hyper-athletic, more defensive-focused player with Luka. That does make some sense. But I think sometimes we just go too far with all of that stuff. When we get into this, you know, oh, he cannot work, cannot ever work, and that's flies in the face of what a lot of this season has proven. Now, again, I mean, Jovan, we've talked about this. If Austin struggles come playoff time, we're going to be right back where we were last summer with the this can never work type talk.
For sure. I think that is the like, I mean, he could be great for the rest of the regular season and struggle in the playoffs. And then I think we have to have a different conversation. I think that will ultimately determine both whether, like, how we feel about the fit with Austin and Luka, and then also what type of contract makes the most sense for him. Where I'd be on board with trading for Jaden. I think Jaden would be an incredible fit next to Austin and Luka. Where you lose me here is MPJ. I think Austin is just a better and better winning player than MPJ. And I like the nicest way possible, I don't really think he's a serious person. And I that's not the type of player I think would fit from like a culture perspective. And if you're gonna like Trey Murphy or someone along that ilk, that's a little bit of a different conversation. But I think MPJ would be selling very low on Austin.
The Lakers,
and I don't think the Lakers would do that.
Yeah. MPJ just got traded because he fell apart in the playoffs.
The Lakers do care about winning the press conference. I don't think you want to put a bunch of mics in front of MPJ. That has proven to not be a good choice. Hey, love from India, guys. Yesterday, India won the World Cup, and after that, we beat the Knicks. Oh, there you go. Somebody else who had a really good day. What do you guys think the Lakers can stand after 82 games? I love Luka. Media has been hating on him lately. No one talks about Luka winning, only losing. Where can they be in the standings after 80? I mean, anywhere from 3-7 right now is the range. And that's, I think, what's exciting coming into the closing stretch of the season is the range of possibilities and that there's still a lot on the line. Anywhere from 3-7 is where they can ultimately land in the standings. We talked a bit about the media and Luka. Jovan, I'll go back to you. He's got, I think there has been a lot of negativity about Luka. I do think that's missed some of the great parts of his game have been overlooked to a degree. Luka also gets held to a high standard because he's Luka. I don't know. Where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I made this point before on my show before. I made this point before on this show. I think it has gone too far at times. I think he's become something of a punching bag, especially on like the national shows or some of the debate TV shows. I mean, they're just throwing out some wild statements about Luka, in my opinion. And it's only about what he can't do or what his shortcomings are. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I don't think he's above scrutiny or criticism. And I know for us, you know, I think we've all individually gotten flack for at times critiquing him, but I would almost love to have like a day have, you know, Anthony Edwards be the, you know, the guy we're talking about on here, or Jokic or Shea or whoever. And like, we're going to critique all those guys as well. I mean, if we were talking about the Denver side after like the win over the Lakers, we would have been critiquing Jokic for the 9 turnovers against the mm-hmm. Lakers, right? Like, he did have a great game with the triple double and hit the 2 big shots down the stretch, but like, he also had 9 turnovers and was pretty sloppy and careless with the ball. And that like nearly cost Denver that game. And if he has 5 turnovers, maybe the Nuggets win that game by, it's a 10 to 15 point win, and it doesn't even get into crunch time, right? So I think if we're dissecting stars, like, there's always going to be some level of criticism because no one is perfect. No player has a 15 for 15 game with 0 turnovers and 10 assists every single night. So if you are falling short in playmaking, if you're falling short in efficiency, if you're turning the ball over, if you're getting attacked on defense, like, you're going to get criticized in some facet of the game. So I do agree, though, that Luka, I think it has been very negative and toxic lately, and people are overlooking a lot of the great stuff that he's doing, and just the level of historic production he puts up on a nightly basis. I just also think that if we critique him at all, that does not mean we hate Luka. That does not mean we think Luka sucks. That does not mean he can't win a championship. Like, I think, as I like to say, two things can be true. It has been too negative, but that also doesn't mean we can't discuss if he takes a bad shot, has a bad turnover. Like, we do that with everybody on the team. There's no one I think we completely like ignore the negatives with.
Yep. 100%. And that's just honest analysis of a player. But we live in a world of extremes. And so that's where you get all of that. And again, I will not go down the pathway of stan culture and all that kind of stuff.
I feel like we were generally very positive about Luka today because he was fantastic for the most part yesterday. I mean, like, problem I always have with these stands for the superstars is they don't want their star to be held to the superstar standard. Like, they want, like, I heard a lot of like pushback on some of the stuff with Luka MVP because people were blaming the media, and it's like, no, the media is not responsible for the fact that Luka hasn't won MVPs. Luka is responsible for the fact that he hasn't won MVPs. Like, ultimately, there's a standard that comes with that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, like top tier in the league. And like, for the record, I've been very critical on my show of Jokic in the last couple of weeks because Jokic's defense experienced some significant slippage, and his touch on his short range shot making, his 3-point shot has been an issue. He's had there's just been a stretch here in the last couple of weeks where Jokic hasn't been as good. What did I say on my show? I was like, when Jokic isn't hitting shots like this, he's not the best player in the world by a wide margin. He's just another one of the guys. Like, the thing is I actually discuss every single one of the top tier guys like this. I've talked about Giannis and his lack of half court polish. I talked last year extensively in the postseason about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and his floor game and how there were entire games where he was just jacking up shots and messing up the flow of his offense and causing problems. The truth is most of us are pretty consistent with the top tier guys and the standard that we hold them to, but stans just can't see that. They literally can't see it. They get so sensitive about any sort of criticism. And I always just come back to the exact same thing. If you want to be considered one of the very best in your profession, if you want to be considered Like, guess who gets more criticism than anybody in the entire sports media space? The Bill Simmons, the Stephen A. Smith, the guys that are in that top tier of television on screen talents. Like, this is just the nature of the business. When you are at the very peak of your profession, there's a lot of criticism that comes with it. Basketball just has this weird stan culture where these people just get really sensitive about that criticism. And like guys, this is the simplest way I can describe it. We have an army every single day in our chat complaining about LeBron. Every single day. Army. most of it is garbage. Most of it is like completely not based in reality. Why? Because LeBron for two decades has been a top five player in the NBA, if not the best player in the NBA, and certainly one of the most famous people, most polarizing people in the world. And it comes hand in hand with a ton of criticism. The crazy thing is a lot of these Luka stans have convinced themselves that he's the only one that's facing criticism. It's just not the case. And like, ultimately, we on this show will continue to cover Luka game to game. And when he's playing really well, we'll talk about how he's playing really well. And when he fails to reach that top tier superstar standard, we'll talk about that too.
What a concept. Just player plays well, we'll talk about why they played well. They play poorly, we'll talk about why they played poorly. There's a whole other deeper conversation about all of that that I promised myself I won't talk as much about anymore. But all right, everybody, I think that's a great way to wrap things up. Everybody, we appreciate all of you for joining. The super chats we didn't get to, I have saved. We will make sure we get to those. Jovan, Jason, this was awesome. Jason, feel better, man. Hope you rest up and all of that the rest of today.
I appreciate it, guys. Yeah, I'm gonna go lay down the rest of the day and pray to God that I wake up tomorrow feeling better. So
all right, everybody, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Until next time, we'll see you and stay safe.